When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Record Rangers podcast. I'm Gavin Berry, and today I'm delighted to say I'm joined once again by the Daily Record's Andy Newport and Sunday Mail chief football writer Scott McDermott. It was a long, long international break. It dragged in, didn't it, Andy? And finally...
Far too long. Now back to the proper stuff, so that's what we're all here for.
Back to reality, so let's start at the end of the 1-1 draw. On Sunday, you were up at Pittodrie. Of course, Celtic draw 1-1 with Motherwell on the Saturday. Gives everyone a bit of a boost heading up the road, thinking chance to cut the gap. 10 minutes into the game, they're 1-0 down. So obviously nobody told the players they had this great opportunity. And then right at the death, a penalty after a VAR check. Nick Walsh misses a shot pull on Connor Goldson. Andrew Dallas refers him to the monitor. Awards a penalty. James Tavernier salvages a point. After the game, Barry Robson raging with the decision. So let's just start, first of all, was it a penalty in your eyes?
I think in today's world of having VAR's eagle eye sort of hanging over everything, yeah, it probably is. I mean, Rangers obviously got one very similar to that against Hearts. Celtic the day before, the one with Greg Taylor at the back post against Motherwell, very similar. But, I don't think, I think VAR's maybe just going a bit too far in this. When VAR came in, it was supposed to be clear and obvious. I think VAR should be there to spot howlers. I'm not sure that falls into the howler category. So I think Rangers can feel quite lucky in a sense to get away with it. But yeah, by strictly the law, it probably is a penalty, but I'm not sure that that's really what we should be looking for. I think if you start going down that road, you're getting 10 penalties a game with that, if that's what they're going to really sort of, if that's the standard for it.
Okay, but you're in the press conference after it, and Barry Robson says, it's not a good, what is the exact quote, that Rangers getting another VAR decision is it's not a good look, and then he sort of pulled himself back. So, but you're saying there have been other decisions like that, very similar ones, 124 hours earlier. So what's the difference? What is the difference then?
You'd need to ask Barry Robson that in terms of what he's alluding to. He was very cute with his words. I think he sort of, as you say, sort of restrained himself before he said too much and got himself into trouble. I mean, I do think it's sort of dangerous territory going down that kind of route with those kind of comments. Referees have got a hard enough job as it is without managers sort of alluding to those kind of things, even if he didn't spell it out in black and white what he meant. As I said, there's been similar decisions elsewhere that went with this. I think it just comes back down to the fact that if Gartman doesn't have hold of Conor Goldson's jersey, even if it's only for a split second, if he doesn't have hold of his jersey, no penalty can be given. I just think it's crazy from the defender, the Aberdeen defender, because, as you say, there's been so many incidents already this season where those kind of things have been pulled up. You're thinking Peter Haring at Ibrox, you're thinking, as I say, the Motherwell won the 24 hours before. So, he's only getting himself to blame in that sense. But I think if this is the way it's going to be in terms of penalties, that every time there's a jersey pull, then they have to all be pulled up. And I know I was at the VAR briefing through the week with Crawford Allen, the head of referees, and Nick Walsh was there as well, put on a very good presentation just explaining how VAR works and, even putting their hands up and saying a few mistakes have been made, three mistakes have been made this season in the batch of games from the start of the season up to the Viaplay Cup semi-finals. So they know that it's not perfect. And, I think the success rate in terms of, the accuracy rate is still about 97%. So there's still that wee very small room where they can improve on. But I just think, if they're going to get to the point where every time there's a jersey pull in the box, that's going to result in a penalty, then, you know, we're going to have, you know, there already seems to be a lot more penalties given this season. I don't think that's really what VAR should be there for, just to re-referee instance. For me, you know, even watching, you know, Fulham versus Wolves last night, you know, a couple of those decisions were a bit iffy, and, you know, the referees seem confident at the time when they make the decisions either to give them or not to give them, and they start getting re-refereed, and I just don't think that's what VAR should be there for. For me, it should be you know, it should be there to, if there's a huge obvious blunder, it should be there to correct those. If it's just a subjective call, something that's, you know, a grey area, then I think we just need to start going back to where we trust referees. I think fans and stadiums would be far happier with that.
I thought Barry Robson let himself down a bit. Gav was, you know, complaining about the, no, this block by Lammers on Gartenman, no, at the, no, that incident, because, I mean, I don't know what he was looking at, but I mean, a blind man can see that the pull of Conor Goldson's shirt started before there was any type of block. I mean, Barry Robson seemed to be adamant that the block came first, which is just ludicrous. Then he started moaning about VAR not looking at Conor Goldson's foul on, is it Polvara in the box?
Polvara, and even the Sky Sports pundit, I mean, even, to be fair, Joe Lewis, the former Aberdeen goalie, was in the studio, and even he said he's clutching at straws here. This is, he was clearly, Barry Robson's head had clearly gone after the game, and he was still emotional about it.
He's not really understanding the process. He's saying, no, VAR should look at it. Well, VAR does look at it. VAR looks at everything. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? He's in his own mind. He's still, VAR's no looked at it because the referee's no going to the monitor. But that's the kind of last step. No, VAR has looked at it, but they've no deemed it serious enough to say to Nick Walsh, look, you need to have a second look. So, listen, I agree with Andy. The penalty's soft. Of course, it's soft. And if Barry Robson is arguing about VAR, or he's arguing about the message that's been sent out to managers, which I'm led to believe is, you know, every shirt tug isn't a penalty and isn't a foul, because they understand these things do happen in the box. If he's moaning about that, then fair enough. I mean, I think most people would understand, and I think most people would agree it's a soft pen. But as Andy says, the way VAR is just now and picking up and everything, as I agree with Andy, mate. You know my views on VAR. I mean, I would never have brought it in. I would scrap it now. It's ruining the game as we know it, as far as I'm concerned. And this is just yet another example. But by the letter of the law and the way VAR is, it's a penalty. There's no getting around that.
But Scott, let's forget his take on the actual incident for a minute. I mean, let's cut to the chase here. He is basically saying and insinuating, and as Andy used the word that's dangerous, he is insinuating that someone has given that decision to favour Rangers, saying it's not a good look. That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
What do you think? Ill-advised?
Oh, definitely ill-advised. And he should know better. I mean, he's been at the Old Firm. He's actually been at both Old Firm clubs. And he knows, well, he knows how can I, no, he knows how it works. But, I mean, it was interesting. I read John Brown's comments paper this morning, and I have to say I agree with him. I think there is a bit of mind games for Barry Robson.
Just explain what John Brown exactly said, just for anybody that has read them.
From memory, I mean, he was just saying, you know, he feels that the reason Barry's come out with these comments is obviously because there's a cup final around the corner, and just planting that seed in referees' minds. No, he might think that will give them a slight advantage going to Hampden. For example, they might just get a decision going in their favour in the cup final. Rangers might not get one that they should have done. And listen, it might not work. And people outside it might think, fair play to Barry Robson. No, he's playing the game.
Yeah.
He's going to do everything to get that, you know, that marginal gain, 1%. If he thinks that might get them a decision in the cup final, you know, by making those comments, then fair enough. I mean, no, we're all kind of used to the kind of mind games and stuff. Yeah. But you're right. I think he's, no, it's a kind of, you cross a line at times when you start questioning referees' integrity. Very few people do that. I mean, we all moan about how bad they might be and about how bad decisions might be, but when you start questioning their honesty, their professionalism, you know, as if there's something sinister going on, then you're starting to play a dangerous game.
I mean, he was so emotional after the game, Scott. I mean, Andy, maybe even you will know better, having been in the press conference. I mean, do you think it was even as calculated as that from Barry Robson? Or do you think there is this... I mean, let's not forget that this came... His comment came in the week of the Celtic AGM when, you know, the chairman, Peter Lawwell, and the chief executive, Michael Nicholson, had a bit of a kind of a jibe and a couple of one-liners about Rangers' decisions. You know, Peter Lawwell saying John Gregg handled the ball the last time Rangers conceded a penalty in the league, and Michael Nicholson saying penalty to Rangers. There is this whole thing. Barry Robson just added to that.
Yeah, I mean, it was an unfortunate phrase, and I think looking back, Barry Robson will probably regret it. But to be honest, being in the room, I just think he was frustrated. I think he'd watched his team defend really well for 90 minutes. You know, they came out with a game plan. They sort of took the game to Rangers. They put the two strikers up against the centre-backs and get so much joy out of it, especially that first 15, 20 minutes. And Rangers couldn't cope with them. Obviously, they get the goal early. They could have had another goal, Sokler, going through on Butland, you know, within 5 minutes. So, and then after that, yeah, they didn't perhaps take... Didn't attack the same sort of intent after that, but defensively they were pretty solid. You know, the goalkeepers made a fantastic bunch of saves. Obviously they've carried the luck a wee bit with the crossbar. So I think he's just come in to the press conference after the game and just been utterly deflated, and he's lashed out. And it's an unfortunate sort of avenue to go down, as I said. But I don't think it's anything more anything more premeditated than that. I think it's just, you know, listen, we all know that. You know, opposition fans of Rangers think that Rangers get. We're aware of what fans of other clubs say about referees and Rangers, and I think he's just sort of tapped into that. But I don't think it's anything that he's come out deliberately trying to, you know, because he did, as I say, he came, he said he was quite cute with it, and he definitely did then try to row himself back afterwards. So I think it's just a frustration. I think he just knows that he's. A decision's gone against his team, and it's cost him 3 points, or certainly 2 points in that sense. So
the statistics are quoted, you know, Rangers haven't conceded a penalty in the league, you know, in however 67 games or whatever it is. I mean, do you honestly think that there is ever whether it was Andrew Dallas on Sunday sitting in that vat in Clydesdale House watching that monitor, or anybody else has ever sat there or sits there with the intention of saying, I'm going to give Rangers a decision here? I mean, do you think? I mean, that's what people believe. I mean, do you think there is any chance of that, or has ever been over? Because this is something that's been, it's been an accusation that's been going for years, you know, about conspiracy theories.
It's ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous. You've been hearing this since we were growing up. I mean, you've been listening to this for 30 odd years, but it's just nonsense. I mean, I think Celtic have had more penalties than Rangers this season, didn't they, in the league.
That's right, well, yeah.
So the two of them are at the top, as you would expect. The two dominant teams attacking the most, scoring the most goals. They're going to get the most penalties. Celtic have had more than Rangers. Celtic fans will list 100 decisions in the last 30 years that have gone against them or have went in Rangers' favour. But Rangers fans can also list 100 decisions that have went against them, you know, whether that be in Old Firm games or other games or whatever. So, listen, it's a Glasgow thing, it's a Scottish thing, it's an Old Firm thing. Been listening to it for 30 odd years.
Yeah.
It's absolute nonsense. Are referees incompetent at times? Of course they are. Do they make mistakes? Of course, like anybody in every walk of life, they're human beings. But you genuinely believe there's guys that get into that profession solely to give an advantage to the team they might support? I mean, it's just honestly.
But that bar meeting we were sitting through last week, they spoke about how when VAR was first introduced, UEFA basically said to Scottish referees, listen, for the UEFA competitions that are now all VAR, covered by VAR now, we're not going to select you guys for... probably a year just to let yourselves get bedded into using the system. But within a few months, within I think it was 6 months, UEFA said, no, you guys are doing well enough. We're going to get bring you back in and start giving you appointments. I think Nick Walsh was the first one, maybe around March time. If you're going to referee, you want to, it's like you're a player, you want to get to the highest level. Now, UEFA are going to be keeping an eye on the way that Scottish referees are performing. There's no way that they're going to, a referee's going to jeopardise his chance of getting to go to a Euros, get to operate the Champions League, get to go to a World Cup potentially, just to help out Rangers or, you know, any team. You know, these guys have got their own ambitions, their own, you know, goals that they want to achieve. And they say that they're going to jeopardise that for something that is then therefore so blatant that you can see that the whole world can comment on. Yeah, of course they make mistakes. They're human, as Scott says. I just think that's, I totally agree with Scott. I just think, you know, I see a lot of Rangers fans saying if it's a conspiracy against Rangers, it's probably been the worst conspiracy ever, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's what, 2 trophies in what, 12 years? So, I don't buy it either. Don't buy it one little bit.
Well, if we think back to the Aberdeen game in Europe recently against Pau, remember there was a decision there that was probably worse than the one that they suffered from on Sunday. So it just goes to show, I mean, was the guy in the monitor that day a Rangers fan? Anyway.
A Pau fan.
Anyway, but in terms of the actual game itself, Andy, as we said at the start there, it was a chance, a rare chance. Celtic slipped up, which wouldn't have been expected, especially after they scored so late against Motherwell. What, were you surprised at the start? I mean, Aberdeen scored after 10 minutes. They could already have been a goal up. I mean, and what does it tell you about the mentality? Does it just tell us something we already knew, that these players don't have that mentality?
Absolutely. I mean, this squad in general, and I think the thing that surprised me most is that for the first time since Clemence came in, you looked, certainly the team sort of middle to front, you go, that's about as strong as Rangers can be. You know, you thought maybe with Jack, apart from Cifuentes, you put Jack in there or Araskin in there ahead of Cifuentes, you think that middle to front is probably as strong as Rangers can be, with Daniel up front, Lawrence, Cantwell, Seema. You know, that's about as strong as Rangers can be going forward. So you thought they would start in the front foot. They took them 15-20 minutes to get going. After that, they were pretty good, but in the day you're behind, so you're having to, you know, chase, and that adds a level of pressure to it. This is just a Rangers team that haven't coped with these opportunities in terms of being able to take them when they're presented with them, really, since, you know, the title winning season. You've been, you know, umpteen times, you know, when, you know, Gio was in charge, when Michael Beale was in charge, when they had these opportunities to go and, you know, cut the gap. Okay, they've done it once with under Philip Clemence so far, with the game at Hearts, and they left it late that day. Obviously, they leave it late again to get a point. It's not a total disaster, but I think it tells you, it'll tell Philip Clemence something about the makeup of the side. You know, he spoke after the game about the fact that it took them 20 minutes to really start getting in and winning tackles, winning the duels, winning the head-to-heads. And I think, you know, if you're a team that's serious about going and really, you know, making a proper fist of this title race, I think you come out of the traps after, you know, straight for kickoff, and you take the game to Aberdeen. You don't sit there and wait for them to score before you get going. So, but listen, that I don't think that's Philippe Clemence's issue. That, you know, this is something he's inherited. He's going to have to find a way to fix it, but I don't think you can sit and point fingers at him. So, it's just even with, you know, as I say, looking pretty strong going forward, you know, defensively, you know, Balogun, who, to be fair, has looked okay the sort of 4 or 5 games he's played the last few weeks, but, you know, he didn't really cope with the physical aspect to Majovski, who I thought was tremendous in the day, along with Kyle Roos, and I thought the two of them were picking a bunch from Aberdeen. And so, you know, Rangers were just, you know, defensively were terrible at times the first 20 minutes, so open, so high, you know, so static when balls were going behind them. So, you know, I just think that that'll be, it'll tell Philippe Clemence something about this team in terms of the mentality, the makeup, and even just the lack of depth at times. You know, John Souter on the bench, strange that he's not back yet. I presume that they wanted to go with Balogun because of his pace, sort of, you know, on the recovery, but for me, he just never coped with the physical aspect of Majovski. So, you know, that'll be some big takeaways for the manager to go after this game.
Scott, Andy was saying as strong as he can get front, but again, and this isn't a new point, but Cantwell not been in that central role seemed to lose something from him there. What do you think? Is it one of him or Lawrence? Or should Lawrence be shifted out wider?
I don't think it has to be. I mean, it's no Todd Cantwell's natural position playing that kind of wide right role. I mean, he does get a wee bit of license to come in, but he would rather no start there. He'd rather be starting in that number 10 position. But he did it well in the European game. Sparta Prague played wide right that night as well in the home game. And I thought he did really well. No, I don't think it has to be one or the other. I think Cantwell would rather play there. But, I mean, Lawrence was signed to play in that position. And you know, they're obviously trying to get Lawrence games, trying to get him a run. You know, Clement, like Michael Beale, clearly thinks Lawrence can be a big player for them in terms of goals and assists. Mm-hmm. But, listen, I think there's two ways of looking at the game on Sunday. You'll get punters who are glass half empty and will believe what Andy is saying there. And you can't really blame them. I think there is clearly a mental weakness there when it comes to, you know, whenever Celtic drop points and there is an opportunity for Rangers to go and hammer home an advantage, they struggle with it. I mean, I think I'm right in saying, you'll correct me, Gav, when Gio was in charge, there was a weekend where Celtic had drop points, Rangers were at home to Motherwell, 2-0 up, and ended up drawing 2 each.
That's right.
I mean, it was just the prime example of the mentality of this Rangers team, incapable of, as I say, really hammering home an advantage and closing the gap. So if you're glass half empty, you look at it as a real missed opportunity. Typical Rangers, as Andy says, there was defensive frailties there in the first half. I thought Conor Goldson was as bad as I've seen him at the weekend, and I've been a fan of his the last few years. But there was definite weakness there. But there will be other punters who are maybe glass half full and just think nothing's been lost. No, they're still in it. It was always going to be a tricky away game,
yeah.
And the chances that they created and the saves that Kelle Roos made, I mean, it did feel like just one of those days. I mean, you think of the two headers that Balogun has. I mean, he has to score one of them. I mean, at least he should score both, but he has to score one of them. And another day, you think one of them goes in.
Yeah,
you think a couple of wee sniffs that Danilo had, and then of course you've got the Lammers' absolute gilt-edged chance late on to win it. Matondo does brilliant in the left. Lammers has got a header 6 yards out that if he just puts to either side of the goalkeeper, it's in. And the key thing about that is that I think if you put a natural goal scorer in that position for that Lammers chance, then he scores. And this is still the problem for me with Rangers, is that they do not have a natural, instinctive goal scorer, finisher in that squad. Danilo looks the part and looks as if he's going to be an important player for them. I like his movement in the box. I like the way he presses. I think he can be a really valuable asset for Rangers. But I still don't think he's a natural-born goal scorer. And
I agree, and this
is a problem because, I mean, clearly Dessers isn't up to it. Couldn't even get off the bench at the weekend. So who else do they have? Kemar Roos, obviously still injured, trying to get his way back. Now, we could debate all day about somebody like Lauren Shanklin coming in, whether you think he'd be a good signing or no. But ultimately, if you put Lauren Shanklin in that Lammers position at the end, it's a goal and Rangers going to win the game. In fact, probably if a Shanklin or a Kyogo or just somebody, a more natural finisher, Rangers are probably ahead in that game fairly comfortably before it even gets to the end and the drama and the penalty and stuff. So that is a key issue at the moment. I agree with Andy, middle to front, that's as strong as Rangers will get. Could argue Raskin or Cifuentes or whatever, but I speak to Kenny Miller every week doing his column, and he's been crying out to get Cantwell, Sima, Lawrence in the same team behind Danilo. Well, that was it.
Yeah.
All they could muster was a penalty in the last minute to the captain.
And just
to say, I agree with Scott in terms of Dinho. Like, I think the team looks far stronger with him in there. He just looks he's just a far more competent striker than Dessers.
Yeah,
but I still don't think he's at the level that's required to, you know, basically compete week in, week in with a Celtic team. Celtic left the door open for Rangers there. They had to take the opportunity there if they were serious about, you know, really turning the screw and making this a proper title race.
He misses loads of chances, Andy. He misses loads of chances. And that's not...
Even he gave it Dundee. He scored a very good goal at Dundee.
That's right.
He should have had three or four that night. So
He comes on against Celtic. Has a guilt... I mean, he gets into positions for gilt-edged chances. He comes on the Celtic game at Ibrox. Gilt-edged chance. Misses it. Away in the... What was the European game early on the season where he misses a sitter at the back?
Geneva.
Yeah,
it's a bit...
He's a good player. His movement in the box is excellent. No, he showed that with a couple of his headed goals this season already, particularly the one against Hearts in the last minute. So he's a good player, really valuable asset to have. But is he a natural finisher? Is he going to get you 25, 30 goals a season? I don't think so. And that's a problem. And that's what I mean about Sunday. Of course, it's frustrating for Rangers fans. And you can totally understand, you know, them thinking the way that Andy's thinking, no, this it's the same again. It's, you know, typical Rangers, Celtic drop points. You know, they can't go and take advantage. That's all true. But I think when you look into it a bit deeper, if they had a natural striker in there, the chances they're creating, certainly the chances they're creating Sunday, that game's out of sight. You know, and even if it isn't, as I say, that chance at the end, somebody's got to take.
Aberdeen had lost 6-0 to Celtic, obviously, in the game before the international break, and Chris Boyd caused a bit of controversy with his comments saying, oh, Barry Robson will have no problem getting his players up for it now. It was obviously different circumstances, Aberdeen at home, but how much do you think Rangers possibly suffer just from having this second rivalry after the Old Firm? They've got this, that clearly Aberdeen, you know, taking aside how much they well, I'm saying taking aside, not taking aside, because if Aberdeen players are getting more up for Rangers games because of this rival, how much do you think it's affecting Rangers?
I'm not necessarily sure. I mean, to be honest, I've not covered many Aberdeen Celtic games up there. I've covered a lot of Aberdeen Rangers games up there. Uh-huh. But I'm not necessarily sure it's a case that the players are more up for it. I think the fans are more up for it, and that in itself has a lifting impact in the team.
Yeah.
I think that's more to do with it. I just think that the atmosphere, I mean, Scott will probably know, you probably covered an equal amount of Rangers and Celtic games up there over the years, but for me, it always just seems that the atmosphere for Rangers got up there is just a lot more ferocious than it is for when Celtic got there. And I think the other fact is that, I think Johnny Hayes alluded to this last week, I just don't think there's any doubt. Celtic have just been a far better team than Rangers over the last 10 years. I mean, the trophy count illustrates that, and I think that you know, that has an impact as well. Celtic have got a deeper talent pool, are able to go up there and, you know, and handle the crowd better than Rangers have been. Obviously, they had a very good sort of run of results sort of under Steven Gerrard up there, but they managed to sort of, you know, take that out of the equation. But there were still some fraught moments. We're still sending off Alfredo Morelos. There were still results that went against Steven Gerrard's team up there. So it's I think it's just more the fact that the fans... Or obviously, they see it as their big rivalry. They see the Aberdeen supporters.
That's what I mean. That Rangers suffering.
Gav,
is it
Rangers? You say Rangers suffering? No, you feel sorry for Rangers because Aberdeen are up for it.
No.
Rangers, we don't. Listen, we know the rivalry. Aberdeen, we know how up for it Aberdeen players and supporters are for Rangers. We know the history, the facts. That's just a fact. Been the same for in my whole lifetime.
Yeah.
It's Rangers' problem that they can't deal with it. I mean, you touched on it earlier about players not starting the game well, and you're right. I mean, have they not been told by Alec Ray or, you know, Brian Gilmer or people in that dressing room that have been over this course a million times?
Yeah.
they have to be ready. They know what's coming when they go to Pittodrie. So, can I feel sorry for them or say no? That they've suffered from it. I mean, it's just a fact. Andy said the Aberdeen fans and subsequently the players will always look and it'll feel that they're more up for it than when Rangers come to town. It's just that's just the rivalry. That's the way it is. I mean, the first half on Sunday, I was watching two Aberdeen centre backs. I don't know if Andy would have seen it at the game, but on TV, two Aberdeen centre backs celebrating.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah. Tackles. I mean, I didn't see much of that at Celtic Park a fortnight ago when it was 6-0. I mean, but that's what that fixture does to the fans, the players and the fans. So, listen, Rangers have just got to deal with that. It's, as I say, that's if Rangers can't deal with it, then it's their problem because they know what's coming. They should know the history of it. I mean, I actually asked Philip Clement on Friday what he'd been told about the fixture and about the history of it. And I expected him to say, well, I've got guys like Alec Ray there, and you know, I've been told that it means a lot, and you know, I know a bit about the history and that. Now, whether he was trying to be clever or no, and just didn't want to say anything, but he basically said, nah, I've not really been told much about it. I mean, I know they're a good team, and I was thinking, well, I mean, somebody should have told you about it, because, I mean, that might help you get into it. Do you know what I mean? If you know what it's all about, and ultimately, you need to say at the start of the game, first 15, 20 minutes, it looked as if they didn't know what was coming. And that's a real indictment of that Rangers team and the squad that they started the game so poorly. Listen, I don't think you can say Rangers have suffered. Whenever they've suffered, it's been their own doing for things like Sunday, starting slow, no getting out the blocks quick enough, no knowing what's expected. I thought the biggest, my biggest criticism of Rangers in that first half, I don't know if Andy will agree, the amount of second balls that Aberdeen won was staggering. I mean, honestly, if you go over that first half again, the amount of times the ball landed, especially in Rangers' half, you know, Aberdeen hitting long balls, the amount of times the ball fell second ball, and it was an Aberdeen player.
Why did I think it was poor for that in the first half? Just, you know, Not jumping out of tackles, but certainly not going in as committed as I thought he should have been. He was a lot better that second half. So there's a few examples of that. I think Barisic had one or two of those as well. So
I thought a lot of it came for the two centre-backs and how weak they were in the first half. Yeah. I thought that almost kind of fed into the other players. I mean, they've got to be the two that are dominant for the off, along with the midfielders, of course, but I just thought the amount of second balls, they just weren't at it that first 15, 20 minutes. And it cost them because you lose the goal, probably could and should have been two. You're giving yourself an absolute mountain to climb at a notoriously difficult venue. So they should have been ready for it. And why they weren't, I'm not sure. I mean, listen, I'm saying before, they obviously should have won the game, the amount of chances they had, but the start was nowhere near good enough. And as I said, that's when Rangers go there, they need, I mean, without harping back, it was difficult going there in the 90s and stuff, but Walter Smith's team in particular, you know, had a way of getting results up there. And at times it would be backs against the wall and you'd need an Andy Gorham or something to pull you out of a hole with a big save. You know what it's going to be like, but you need to have that steel and resilience to go and get the win. And that's feeding back into what I was saying earlier about Andy's point. If you're the glass half empty guy, you're just thinking it doesn't matter about chances or possession or whatever. They had to win on Sunday to take advantage of Celtic dropping, and ultimately they failed again.
Right, just finally, one each positive note to end. Andy, start with you. Thursday, Limassol, home, win. Do you fancy a win? And I thought all but put them through the knockout stage,
I would fancy them. I didn't think Limassol were great, obviously, over there. But the fact that Rangers were just so awful in the night, you know, obviously just coming a few days after Michael Beale's sacking, you know, Stephen Davis in the dugout for that game, they just looked at a team at their absolute lowest ebb that night, and it was a dreadful, dreadful display and an even worse result. But since then, obviously, they've made some major strides. Yeah, Sunday, I think you can look at Sunday as a result, maybe given the way that they did perform that first 20 minutes and fall behind it, you know, previously, maybe under Michael Beale, they don't come back and even get a result. So the fact that they had the wherewithal to come back and at least get a point from the game shows some level of progress. But I still think they've come on leaps and bounds since Phil Clement's come in, and I would think they should take care of Limassol fairly comfortably and get the result that, as you say, pretty much guarantees football after Christmas, European Great. Football after Christmas.
Great. That means you can just enjoy Seville.
Do your Christmas shopping. Tell that to the missus. So I'll spend the week before Christmas. I'm not sure she's going to be too pleased, but that's the job, unfortunately, boys. So.
And Scott, for you, Ross McCausland looks like 2027. A deal looks if he's on the verge, certainly agreeing. Good business. I see Barry McFerguson in his record sport column last week comparing him to Neil McCann.
Yep.
It's quite an interesting column talking about him, his tenacity and his determination.
Now, it looks apart. Expect that to get announced in the next day or two. It had to get done, just given the impact that he's had, especially since Philip Clement has come in. But it's just interesting, Gav, that his contract's been allowed to run down to this point. I mean, what that tells you is that, you know, previously, whether that be Michael Beale or the people behind the scenes, you know, they maybe didn't think that Ross McCausland was going to make that breakthrough. And it probably took, you know, one of his countrymen, Stephen Davis, to give him an opportunity when Davis had those two games in charge. I think you put him on in Limassol, and then crucially St Mirren away when Zach Lovelace got injured, and I think he had Lammers and Dessers on the bench that day, and he put McCausland on instead. And to me, that was the real opportunity that the kid needed. And listen, he's grabbed it. I thought the home game against Sparta Prague when he came on, I thought he was outstanding.
He came on
and made an unbelievable impact for a boy so young at that level. In terms of, I mean, he came on and made two killer passes for chances, then had a shot that was saved only space about 10 minutes within 10 minutes from coming on. So listen, he deserves it. His contract shouldn't have been allowed to run down at this stage, but it has. And it looks as if Rangers are going to tie that up, because clearly Clement has liked what he's seen from McCausland since he came in. And look, he's not going to come in and be I don't think he'll be a regular starter for Rangers right away, but I think he's shown enough in the games that he's played to say that he looks pretty fearless, looks as if nothing will faze him. He's confident. I think he can definitely offer something for Rangers when, as we've all agreed, this season they lack a bit of width. Obviously, Matondo coming back at the weekend will help with that, but McCausland definitely gives them something different. So it's great to see a young boy coming through, getting his chance and taking it.
Great. Brilliant. Well, thanks again, as always, guys. I think we've covered pretty much everything possible there. So Limassol on Thursday, St Mirren on Sunday, and then we can hopefully meet again next week to over the weekend.
Euros draw before that, Gav.
Well, Euros draw, you're swanning off to Hamburg. Sorry, I forgot about that. You're swanning off.
I'll get a big one. Somebody has to do it.
Enjoy those. Enjoy all the delights that Hamburg has to offer.
Cheers. Cheers, Gav.
Cheers.